From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
What's not to love about zinnias? Organic seed farmer and breeder Don Tipping of Siskiyou Seeds and I both vote an emphatic yes in favor of making zinnias a part of every garden year. But what goes into creating the diversity of zinnia colors and forms and sizes, and what are some new looking ones that you might want to try in 2024? That's our topic today, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, offering 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Don Tipping founded Siskiyou Seeds, a family-run, farm-based seed company, in 1997. His farm with a view is located at 2,000 feet of elevation in the Siskiyou Mountains of southwest Oregon and has close to 1,000 varieties of vegetables, herbs, and flowers in its collection. As if that were not enough, Don creates a YouTube channel of how-to videos and a long-running blog and hosts multiple on-farm trainings for gardeners and farmers each year. I'm so glad he's back today to talk about this beloved annual flower, the zinnia. Hi, Don. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Good. Winter. but I guess it's seed selling season, so probably not winter. not quiet for you.
Yeah.
I was thinking that with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com, I think I'm going to underwrite a $25 gift certificate for Siskiyou Seeds as a gift so people can comment and so forth and enter to win. And also just to say to people, you and I recently collaborated on a story in the New York Times, a garden column on growing onions and leeks, something you taught me how to do almost a decade ago, how to grow from seed. And so I'll give a link to our former conversation into that with the transcript too for people who want to get started on those early bird crops. But zinnias, we share this passion, as I said in the introduction, for zinnias, yes?
Yeah, very much so. They're, it seems like kind of an obvious thing to like having vanilla or ice cream or chocolate be your favorite type of ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
But I think because they have so much potential in terms of diversity of flower forms and colors, I just keep coming back to my intrigue with them.
Yeah, I mean, I've always known them, you know, since I first gardened, and yet I never knew ones like the shapes and sizes and whatever that I'm seeing these days. And, you know, so I see on some catalog websites that there are some hybrid zinnias, but all of yours, like all of the Siskiyou Seeds varieties of everything, are open pollinated. Yes,
correct. Yeah, and I think it's a difficult. You know, people want to reduce things down into binaries of open pollinated or hybrid, but the truth of the matter is that populations are constantly hybridizing, and that's where Dr. John Navazio taught me to use the term proprietary F1 hybrids when referring to those commercial ones, whereas zinnias in particular, because they have what are called jumping genes, they or transposons is the, you know, the molecular biologist term for them. Basically, this is how epigenetics show up in flowers, of genes that can be turned on or off. So it's really difficult to stabilize some of the unique variants of zinnias. You really have to grow thousands of plants to see that 1 in 1,000 individual. And just because you save seed from it doesn't necessarily mean that you've stabilized it and those traits will continue to express in subsequent generations.
Right. So the parent plant won't, all its babies won't be identical any more than I don't look like my parents.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, to simplify things. So how many years since you first tinkered with a zinnia, who, since you let a whole population grow out in your, in a field somewhere on your place and said, ooh, I really like that one over there. I'm going to save seed from that one. How long ago do you suppose?
But it was sort of an evolution. We used to grow zinnia seed every year for seed to change in a, you know, large quantities where we'd grow 5 or 10 pounds of seed. And when we are doing that, we are typically growing a single color. So anything that deviated from that, we would actually destroy those plants, pull them out by the roots. So then eventually, once I started siskiyou seeds back in 2009, is when I began to realize that, oh, those unique ones, that might be something worth saving seed from and actually beginning to nudge it in that direction. Because, you know, just like my analogy with ice cream, you can get vanilla and chocolate anywhere, but, you know, unique types, I think that is really the bread and butter for, you know, these small regional seed companies like Siskiyou Seeds, is not offering the usual kind, but having unique types. Yeah, and it keeps it interesting for me, you know, because I've been doing this 30 years, so gotta find new ways to keep it exciting.
New adventures. Well, some of the ones that, you know, I mean, there's been, not just from you, but from elsewhere, like recently, you know, first there were decades ago, I don't even remember the names of the zinnias, and then the Benaries giants became a thing. And mm-hmm. But lately, these queen, you know, lime queen, the ones with the word queen in them,
exactly,
are just so gorgeous. And they kind of like appeared, and a lot of people started selling them. I can't find any information on who bred them or where they began. You know, I see the breeder referred to as just the breeder in various catalog descriptions in various places, but I don't see who it was. But, you know, so that's been sort of one of the latest zinnia rages. But you've gone off in a direction. Yours, as you describe them, some of them look like undersea creatures, and they're just, some of them come off like sort of cactus shaped flowers and get even wilder and crazier. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're actually shining a light on, you know, when you describe some of these new varieties that show up in the big mainstream catalogs, on a bit of the underbelly of the largely Dutch flower seed trade. And I can't verify this, but I want to start looking and poking around. I've heard that they use irradiation to induce polyploidy and novelty in a lot of flower variants, because florists are always looking for the new thing. And genetics tends to throw out the off types. You know, the mutants tend not to express readily, but, you know, through literally, you know, irradiating or doing, you know, novel breeding technologies like cell fusion and cisgenics, the mainstream industry has been tinkering with things, you know. So it's different than the traditional GMO. We're not doing that here. I'm just literally combing the fields looking for novelty, and we take little ribbons of surveying tape, or I actually use jewelry bags
that
are like breathable mesh. So if I have a large population, let's say 1,000 plants or more, and I notice an individual, zinnias are in the Asteraceae, so they're related to calendulas, sunflowers, lettuce, marigolds, chrysanthemums, that type of thing. Well, I'm sorry, I said chrysanthemums, I mean asters. Mm-hmm. And that they are widely open pollinate, and they have two types of flowers in them. They have disc flowers and ray flowers. And if you've ever held calendula seed in your hand, you can really see this, or looked at a zinnia, for instance, up close, and see how there's the disc florets have little yellow flowers that in and of themselves are flowers that have both male and female flower parts and can pollinate themselves or be cross-pollinated, where the ray florets, what we look at as petals,
right,
are actually showy bracts, B-R-A-C-T-S, to use the, you know, botanical term. those don't have stamens, so they don't make pollen, but they can receive pollen. So when you look at the calendula seed, back to that example, you see what look like little gray fish hooks and then larger buff colored fish hooks. The little ones are from the disc florets and the larger ones are from the ray florets. This differentiation is less pronounced in zinnias, but if you carefully sort out your zinnia seed, you can figure out which seeds came from the disc florets.
Wow.
Whereas those that came from the ray florets.
Cool.
So every time a pollination thing happens, you have a whole myriad of, it could be self-pollinating. So this, I'm explaining this to describe the jewelry bag. Why use that? Because then you know that whole plant is self-pollinating, or that flower. And that's assuming you got to it before the florets on the disc opened up. So you have to go out in the morning, you know, when it's still kind of cool out and there's dew, and look for flowers that are a little on the immature side, and then put the bag over it and then let it mature. You're greatly reducing the amount of viable seed when you do this, but it is a way to begin to narrow down in the direction you want to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're not irradiating, you're putting jewelry bags on.
Yeah.
So you're making observations and putting ribbons on them and putting jewelry bags on them and so forth, and kind of steering the population if you can in a direction that appeals to you. And the assortment of zinnias that you sell in the Siskiyou catalog, I mean, you have some really fun ones. You do have one of those queen types. I forget which one you have. And some another mix that I've always liked, the jazzy mix, which I think is so well named because it's got such fun sort of colors in it. But you have one that I've never actually grown called the Red Spider. Tell us about that one. Now, that's quite different. It looks like a species plant to me, that one. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't even, it looks like a...
Oh, totally.
Like very old, like back to the roots kind of genetics. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned the jazzy mix, and that is actually a different species from the traditional zinnias that people grow. So the traditional zinnia that most people are familiar with, the Latin name is zinnia, is the genus, and elegans is the species.
Right.
Whereas the genus for the jazzy mix is zinnia, once again, same genre. The species name is Hagenia. So it's actually, it's a different species because they all originated in central Mexico, where it was basically a wildflower. And so the red spider is, I think, really more of a progenitor of modern zinnias.
And isn't it like tenua folia or something? It's like a whole species into itself. Yeah.
So, you know, the plants are more diminutive. They only grow 18 to 24 inches tall. They're all red. I've never seen another one that's a different color. And they don't tend to thrive as much here. And perhaps it's, we live in the mountains, so maybe it's our cool nights, whereas, you know, subtropical central Mexican highlands is a different climate than Oregon. But nonetheless, I like growing them just for their novelty. And the petals tend to be thinner. So I think that's where the name spider comes from.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and, you know, you can... think of like dahlias are also native to central Mexico. And if you look at the seed grown varieties, you get to see sort of the, you know, parental forms that gave birth to all the different modern ones that were ultimately hybrids that then people went to tuber reproduction. So,
yeah. You have some fun with, I mean, you have, speaking of, you know, ones that are in the zinnia elegans, the more expected species or more common species, you selected from one that people may know, the peppermint stick, to make one that you call, I think, fire starter. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, this started, Frank Morton and I, we had a conversation of, I just asked him like, hey, the, you know, peppermint stick is two different colors and really three. There's sort of, it, you know, yellow and red and then white and red, but there's also sort of a cream and red in there, which I think is an intermediary one.
Now, and if we should say, Frank is a seed farmer, Wild Garden Seeds. Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for mentioning that. Yeah. And he's definitely, you know, a dear friend and mentor of me and, you know,
and so many
pioneer.
Amazing. Yeah.
And yeah, check them out before I think they're inching towards retirement. So kind of get it while the getting's good. But we were joking around. I was like, hey, have you ever thought of stabilizing one of the colors? And he was doing the white and red. So I was like, well, I'll do the yellow and red. So we use greenhouses sometimes if we want to stabilize something that is really attractive to pollinators, with the thinking that we can control pollination a little bit more. So the fire starter is really just saving seed from the most yellow and red ones. And I want to mention a really fun thing, and maybe you've noticed this in zinnias or other flowers, is that variety in particular tends to produce what are called chimeras. And you can also see jumping genes in action. So in my selection of that variety, I wait for the first flower to happen. And I only want to save the plants that produce yellow and red striped ones that literally look like either yellow petals that somebody took a paintbrush and painted a stripe of red on them or in some way. So then I cut off all those. I rip out all the ones that are white and red. And then I cut off all the flowers of the yellow red ones, that first flower, because it could have cross-pollinated with the white and red ones. Then I let them all flower. And what I've seen happen is ones that produce all red flowers. And before I learned this, I would cut those off and or rip those plants out. But then I began to notice, like, wow, on the same plant, they can produce all red and yellow and red striped. And what that is the plant doesn't distribute growth hormones and its genetic potential equally.
Oh.
Just like we don't look like our siblings, even though we technically have the same genetics. And the other thing it will do is chimeras, which is, I don't know if that's a botanical term or just in the flower tree. One where the flower is basically half red and half another color, like in this instance, red and yellow striped. I've tried saving seeds from this, but I don't think chimeras is something that you can pin down genetically. It just has to do with growth hormones and transposons and how genetic potential is distributed in a given plant, depending on environmental stresses.
It's pretty cool. So that's a fun one, fire starter. And some of yours are these mixes, or you sometimes call them remixes. Like you have one that you call that you're offering called the Dreaming or Dreamin' Remix, for instance. Mm-hmm. And that was already a cross of elegance, and I say Hagiana, or however we say the other species, you know.
Yeah.
That was already that someone else did, and at P Seedlings, Nodelana capular. But you then look at the population and you keep going. Yeah. You might.
Yeah. And this can't, you know, maybe you could describe it as a back cross. So it's a hybrid between those two zinnia species, then back cross to the cactus mix, and trying to get, you know, my goal with that. And I think people, gardeners, like novelty, and I try and be transparent in our catalog to not expect every plant to exhibit the same traits, but you're bound to, it's kind of like, I don't know, Cracker Jacks, you're going to get a different surprise in every box or something. That my goal is to produce one that looks like the Dreamin' mix that Delana Capular took over from her father, Dr. Alan Capular, of that cross. And they've never disclosed it's a cross, but I've grown up zinnias where that's my hunch.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that trait that you see in the jazzy mix or the Persian carpet type zinnias. Is I want to get one that has that interesting kind of bullseye pattern of different colors on every petal, but with the quilled petal shape of the cactus types. So we'll see, you know, there's no guarantee. I think, you know, sometimes when you have a breeding objective, it's actually counter to the reproductive success of the plant. and the only way you learn that is through trial and error.
Yeah, I love the name of one that you have your offering that you bred. You call it Crazy Legs. Tell us about Crazy Legs. Speaking of this sort of cactusy
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so that's started by growing large amounts of the cactus mix, which has a quilled petal shape, which the botanical term would either be revolute, like rolled outwards
Yeah.
on itself, or rolled inwards on itself, which is involute. And I began to notice ones that had these other traits. One actually has a botanical name called fimbriculated, where the petals don't end at a tidy point, but are more splayed out. And
Huh.
then I noticed ones where the petals themselves, instead of growing straight, were sort of squiggled. And my initial breeder's name for that was Frippertron, or what was it? Was it Frippertronics? Yeah, after Robert Fripp, who was the guitarist for
Haha.
the kind of 60s, 70s progressive rock band King Crimson. But my seed staff, who are all under 40, was like, no, that doesn't work.
No,
And my
Grandpa. They said
reason,
no, Grandpa, right?
yeah, totally. Well, and I take these surveying ribbons and I write with a Sharpie on there just so I can keep track of all this stuff. So I was like, okay, that you're going to be Frippertronic, because he invented the first like electronic tape loop music, you know, just something novel. So Crazy Leg was a more descriptive name. The one, Crazy Legs is a fuchsia one. I have cream colored version in development and an orange one in development and a yellow one, but those aren't stabilized yet. So
Well,
there'll
they're
be a whole,
fun
you know.
and fun and wild, as is your, I mentioned it before, the one that sort of looks like undersea anemones, the tide pool mix.
Yeah.
Yeah, so before we take up all the time with Zinnias, because we have about 4 or 5 minutes left,
Okay.
I want to just ask you about what else are you excited about at the moment? Because it sounds like you're still playing with Zinnias. Are there other things that you're,
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, every year we pick three or four things to do variety trials on, and that allows us here on the farm to really use the farm not just for seed production, but also as a research and development facility. So the ones we're doing for that this year are radicchios, because
Oh.
there's a whole trend starting there, and we just want to learn as much as we can to grow as much diversity, and then we'll offer that mix as a seed crop for 2025, which feels weird to say that. And then we're also doing carrots, but similar to zinnias, not many people grow China asters. But they're just as easy to grow, and I think just as spectacular. And I think it could be one of the, you know, next big things for home gardeners and small scale farmer florists.
I think those are
So,
what, Calostephas? Is that the genus? Calostephas, I
yeah.
think. Yeah. And they're beautiful flowers. And speaking of things that can come in different flower forms, they can look like a big double chrysanthemum, or they can look like airy and I don't even know how to say, with just, I don't know, just so effusive, some of them. So
Exactly.
they can be quite different.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
I'm just now thinking they would make an excellent companion, like some cool variant mix with the tide pool mix zinnia, and
Yes.
maybe for some future octopus's garden collection or
Oh, I
something.
love that. The Octopus's Garden Collection. Yeah, like lots of tentacles.
Yeah.
Crazy legs.
Yeah.
Lots of crazy legs. Yeah, good. Okay. So those are three things: radicchio, carrots, China asters. Those are a
Yeah,
couple of
and
things.
then another thing, kind of, you know, similar to the zinnias that I've been working on, is a striped kernel sweet corn that I call Starburst Select. And you see this trait in flower corn. Some native communities call it chinmark corn, named after the cultural tradition of tattooing women in some of the Northwest tribes. But basically, at the stage of eating, I have this variety in development that is a sweet corn. And when you eat it, each kernel looks like somebody took a small paintbrush and drew a little starburst of red on it.
Oh.
And I'm like 85% of the way there of having a variety that, as far as I know, has never existed before. And I don't know why, because it wasn't that hard to create. So
Huh.
that's exciting. And we offer seed of that. We always sell out. It's very limited quantity right now.
Huh. Interesting. Well, and you've done a
Yeah.
lot over the years with flower corns, you know, the ones as in you would make meal or flour out of them. Not flower corns. And very colorful. Some of them have been very colorful, which are just beautiful as well. And I think, you know, just in the last minute, it seems like you've been adding some medicinal herbs to the catalog as well.
And that's, you know, as a seed company, we have what we're excited about, but we also have to respond to where the culture is going. And that's something I've noticed a big resurgence in interest in people growing their own medicinal herbs. So I have an employee who has some experience with that, Taryn Hunter, who I've really just tasked with figuring out what's the hot herbs to grow, what should we be either growing or... We also work with a great company out of Washington called Friends of the Trees Botanicals. And that's Michael Pilarski, who goes by the name Skeeter, who's one of our permaculture elders here in the Northwest. And they grow and harvest medicinal herb seed that we offer.
Well, a lot of fun choices. As I said, there's like 1,000 things in your collection and maybe 700 in any given year being offered. We're going to have a giveaway with the transcript of the show. People can comment over on awaytogarden.com on the transcript of this show and enter to win a $25 gift certificate. I'm so glad to speak to you. I always learn from you, Don, and I hope that we'll keep the lessons going for more years to come. So thank you. Thank you. And have a good seed selling season, huh?
Thanks so much.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in. I hope I'll hear from you all again soon too. Don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. Happy seed shopping and gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, offering 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.